the sun. And get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With me today, very excited to talk to this guy. I finished his book recently, Man Versus Baby, The Comedy and Chaos of Real Life Parenting. Please welcome to the show, Matt Coyne, everybody. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Justin.
Greetings. How you doing? Greetings from across the pond, as they say. Yeah, is that the correct term?
Yeah, the pond, the Atlantic.
Before we get into anything parenting, I tipped you off to this via Skype, but I'm going to put you on the spot right out of the box because, Matt, what you don't know about me is I've recently been on this very strict diet, right? So I had high cholesterol and I'm going through this whole thing. And one of the things, there's a lot of like hippie Southern California, Los Angeles, you know, nutritionists where I'm not a real medical doctor, but I have a chiropractic license and therefore I could tell you what to eat. You know what I mean? That kind of vibe. You picking up what I'm okay. putting down, Matt? This is going off. Yeah. This is going off to a great start, huh?
So I feel like I've Skyped into the wrong podcast.
No, you're in the right spot. Just buckle up. It'll be fine. Okay. So anyway, one of the things is they had me not drink coffee. And right. There's research that shows that if you drink coffee on an empty stomach, especially in large volumes, that it activates the cells in the lining of your stomach and increases the amount of acid they make. And then that could kill the good bacteria in your gut. Now, the reason I'm going through all of this with you now, Matt, is because I now drink tea. And you being a man of Britain land, I think you would be a true connoisseur because here in the States, right? And that was one of my favorite things, by the way, reading your book was every time you mentioned having tea or sitting down for tea, I was usually drinking tea. And so black tea and green tea, I don't know if it's because of the lower levels of caffeine than coffee, but they actually promote the good bacteria in your gut. So I need to know now. You drink tea pretty much exclusively, I imagine. Yes,
I do. Your lot made the mistake of throwing it all in the harbor, as I remember.
Yeah, and so, therefore now we have things called fair trade tea that we have to pay an exorbitant amount of money to.
Well, the weird thing is that I don't know what the difference is between black tea and green tea. We just have tea. I know that over there you can go into a restaurant and order like lemon tea and black tea and green tea with Earl Grey, that sort of stuff. But we just have tea.
So is all of your tea is just black tea then? Is it just
we just call it? It's just English breakfast tea, and that's what everybody drinks really, unless you're a real connoisseur about these sort of things. But the weird thing is that I do drink nothing but tea, really. And my cholesterol's still off the charts.
Oh, really? Oh, well, thanks for that. Yeah, now, I guess
I'm like 98% pork rind. It's like pork dripping if you used to take a vial of my blood, basically. And I drink nothing but tea. So you're barking up the wrong tree there.
Well, basically. Here's what you should know. Maybe you have high cholesterol, but your high cholesterol is not due to the bacterial imbalance of your gut. That's what I think you should at least know. Or maybe you shake it up a little bit. Because what I wanted to know is and I think you've accidentally already answered my question, is that right now I am enjoying a vanilla bean macaroon black tea. I don't know why you're
what
laughing.
Is that?
That's it's delicious, number one.
Okay.
I was hoping that you would say that if I was to move to England, I could enjoy my vanilla bean macaroon black tea and I would not fear judgment of losing my masculinity. But it sounds like by your bully-esque chuckle that I am in the wrong. No matter where I go, I'm a fairy. It sounds like
you would be coming to the wrong island to drink your vanilla macaroon-esque. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's such a downer. All right. Well, onward and upward, I guess. So anyway, the other thing I want to talk about is, first of all, to the listeners, Man Versus Baby, Matt's book here, hands down the funniest parenting book out there. If you just had a kid, If you're about to have a kid, I would recommend this as a comedic palate cleanser for the what to expect when you're expecting bullshit that you will also read. Because it's also informative, but it's great in that you'll get that information and you'll have it to stand on. And then Matt completely shits all over it and makes it hilarious. And so it'll keep you grounded and keep you real. And I know this sounds super douchey to say out loud, but I honestly believe it would keep you present. When I was reading this, it is so cathartic as a guy who has a 9 and a 6-year-old now to look back at these days and remember it. And it really is 200 plus pages of a comedy special about parenting. I'm not kidding. This thing is so.
That's very, very kind of you.
I'm not saying it to be kind. I'm saying it because it's the God's honest truth. I have some highlighted quotes here. This is early on in the book where you talk about the differences between your experience with childbirth from movies and television, which is what we all have. And then when you get faced with the stark reality of it, and I just love this sentence here. Take something as simple as the position in which women give birth. Every film and sitcom I've ever seen has the woman lying on her back throughout labor, legs akimbo, as if she plans to fire the baby out of her primed vagina cannon. Oh, you got me with legs akimbo, and then you hit me with vagina cannon, and I was out for the count, my friend. Oh, yeah,
vagina
so good.
Cannon. I don't know where that came from.
That's what's great too, is that I was hoping that this is how this would go, because I often have moments, not nearly as good as what are in this book, but I have moments on this podcast where people are like, oh, I can't believe you said this, and then they'll say it, and I don't remember saying it at all.
I should have hashtagged the shit out of vagina cannon.
Vagina cannon. Oh, yeah. That could totally be your own little catchphrase. One more thing I want to read. It's a little bit later on in the book, because here's the thing. Like each chapter walks you through an awesome comedic perspective on parenting, from literally the childbirth process to bringing the baby home, all of the things that it takes to take care of the baby and as the baby kind of grows up. So it's great if, like I said, it's great if you have younger kids, even if you have kids that are like my age, 9 and 6, or you're in the teenage years and you're hearkening back to the cuteness of that and you want to just go back and laugh your ass off. I'm not kidding. You will laugh out loud when you read this book. He really strikes a nerve and does it awesomely. And I really suggest you drink some hot tea while you're enjoying it, because it makes it that much more enjoyable. Maybe you don't do the vanilla bean macaroon or the what's another caffeine free one I have in there? These the frosted lemon loaf that I.
They saw you coming at the tea shop.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm just going to need to start ordering my tea bags in cock flavor, I think is what I need to do.
Now, that is a popular British phrase.
Oh, okay. Is that one, that one you do have. So it's English breakfast and cock. All right, got it.
It's just cock and balls and English.
Oh, you
English
do the breakfast. Balls too. Well, okay. We trim them out in America.
It comes in the bag.
But then there's these great things where he takes on topics like breastfeeding in public and vaccinations. And it's funny is that I've always been kind of on the fence, but after reading your book, Matt, I kind of opened my eyes a lot. And I don't want to ruin it for the listener, but I do love this very comedic. I think it's great. And I never had this as a stand-up when I traveled a lot as a comic, but where you can have a joke that makes somebody go, oh yeah. And it'd be funny at the exact same time. And I think this is one of those moments here. What you actually see when a baby is breastfeeding is the back of their fucking head. And if you're disgusted by the back of a baby's head, you should see what comes out of their ass. Oh, so good. So good.
It's interesting to listen to this back, because I can't remember writing any of it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's fun.
This was all written in the first while my little boy was less than one. So.
And how old is he now?
He's 2.5.
2.5. And then, so are you guys already like moving on to a second one, or are you done with one?
No, we are so done.
You're so done.
A second one, I think, would kill me at this point.
That would put you in for sure. So, and this whole thing started that you went on Facebook and wrote a post, right? And then all of a sudden it was getting shared and people were responding to the post, and it kind of took off from there. Is that how the book kind of came to be?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it was on my personal Facebook page where I just you know when the baby's kind of 2 or 3 months old and you've got a backlog of messages from people wishing you well and messaging to see how you're getting on and see how you're coping. Mm-hmm. I can't stress this enough, Justin. I'm quite a lazy person.
Wait, what? Are you going to tell me that someone with a sense of humor is also lazy? That doesn't sound right to me, Matt.
That is my defining characteristic, is laziness, basically. So I thought, well, I can't be asked to reply to all these messages. It's not that I'm not grateful, but you're quite busy when they're kind of like 2 or 3 months old. So I thought I'll just write a quick Facebook post, share it with my friends and family, and let them know all at once how I'm getting on. And the following day, I woke up in the morning, didn't really think anything of it, but the following morning I got 20 likes on it. And that was quite a big deal for me at the time, because no one listens to a word I say ordinarily. So 20 likes, I thought, oh, I've really nailed this parenting thing. This is great. But then I started getting messages from people who I didn't know, asking me if they could share the post, but I needed to turn on some widget on Facebook so that you can share it outside of your friends and family. So I flicked that on, and by the end of the day, it was like been shared like 5,000 times.
Wow.
And by the end of the week, it was like 20,000. And just last week, it's just passed being seen by 15 million people, that first post.
Wow.
So.
And did you have, in your, outside of obviously being a father, did you have any professional ambitions in comedy, or did you write comedy? Did you write anything before this came up?
No, not at all. I was I did English at university. I did an English degree, and then but I got really bad results, so I never wrote anything again for the next 15 years. And
what university?
This is probably the longest thing I'd written in probably 15 years. Yeah.
What university did you go to?
To Manchester.
Oh, fuck Manchester. Am I right then? What the hell do they know?
You are not wrong. I need to get that on a sweatshirt.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck you Manchester. I would send your old literature professor a copy of the book, and I would put a post-it note on the front with the overall tally of how many times you say the word cock or fuck in this book. And then like add it up like it's bad math. And at the bottom, just put how many copies sold would be.
That is what I'm doing. Immediately that we finish this podcast, that's what I'm going to do. Do you know what's really infuriating is that that my university has a reunion every year for alumni of previous years. And this is the first year they're not doing it. It's
the first year what I would have turned up.
I know.
Oh, that's the worst.
I was going to land in a chopper.
Yeah, right.
On a Diamante leash. Fully pimped up for this. But now they're not doing it this year. I'm absolutely fucking fuming.
Well, you know what? Maybe they'll pick it up next year. And that just means more copies of the book sold at that point. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
By then you'll be you'll be on Good Morning America. If you want, you can come to my college reunion. I don't know if they have one, but I'll gladly, you could be my plus one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in for that.
All right, good. All right. It's, why not? Take a holiday. You know what I mean? The other question I wanted to talk to you about, because what Matt does in the book is he not only breaks down all the levels of care and kind of braces you. I really think, honestly, I think I've said this already, but if you haven't had a kid yet, it is a good way to prepare. As funny as it is, it gives you the real perspective, like the real look at things. And but you break down like how to entertain a baby. And one of the things that you mentioned, and I don't know if this is a British thing, we do have British listeners to the podcast, and I've never heard of this, which is a baby rave. What is a baby rave?
A baby rave. Yeah. For the book launch in the UK, actually, we put on a baby rave, which is we had 200 babies in a warehouse in the north of England with a full DJ, a full rig, and a full lighting rig, smoke machine. It's literally a rave, but everybody's sort of under 3 feet tall. But that's basically what it is.
But I guess
nothing more complicated than that. It is a rave.
So it's exactly what you think is a rave, but it's exactly just with a bunch of dwarves in there who are not real. They're sucking on pacifiers for a different reason.
Yeah, basically. Okay. It's exactly the same as a regular rave, but there's less ketamine.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And before was it now, and I want to know, you could shoot straight with me if I'm just the victim of a bit. Like, are there, I know you had one for the launch, but were there actual, like, is baby raves a thing, or is that like?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, just little parties
so
for babies.
You don't have these in the States then.
No, we don't have them at all. I mean, the closest we have is mommy and me groups. And if you're listening to this and you're in the States or any other country, please let me know if I've been living under a rock this entire time and not knowing about the deep underground, world of EDM music and toddlers.
It's one of the. It's when you know, you know. Justin,
I guess, right? It sounds like Fight Club. Like, you know, the first rule is you don't talk about baby raves. Man, I'm worried about your safety at this point. Then you're exposing a world that no one. And is it like? Is it in people's living rooms or is it like a preschool that you just go there and they have some music and they play?
No, they're at nightclubs.
No,
they're in bars.
Yeah. So they take a nightclub or a bar. And then and then you have an entry fee that you come in, and then they just play loud music. And are they playing Barney and Teletubbies, or are they playing like Deadmau5 or Deadmau5? That's a stupid joke from the morning show I used to be on. Deadmau5. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Deadmau5.
They're playing Deadmau5.
It's proper rave music. It's a proper rig. It's proper lighting. Proper sound system. Everything. It is literally a rave.
Oh my gosh! Oh my god! It's so funny. When I read that, I was like, wow, that sounds so weird. And now I am unbelievably jealous that I have never gotten to even see this. And is it like, honest to God, how many baby raves, if I wanted to, if I came to just where you live right now, Matt, if I came there next week and I said, I want to hit up as many baby raves this week, how many, honestly, do you think I could get? I mean, is it two or three, or is there one a week?
Every major city will have one every week, I think.
At least one that I could go a nightclub.
At least one. There's some great ones in London, quite famous clubs like Tiger Club, and they're quite difficult to get tickets for. But in the north of England, yeah, there's at least, there's a local company called, near to us, called Boom Chicka Boom, which put on the major raves in the north of England. But
that sounds like that would be exclusively for baby raves, Boom Chicka Boom.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'd be welcome to that.
That's wild. I did not know that was a thing in any way, shape, or form. That is so weird.
Now I know that it's not a thing in America. Now I can franchise it.
That was going to be my next move. I was going to say, well, since you seem to know so much about it and already how to market it. The other thing I liked from the book before we take our first break here is that you designed. Walk me through your design of a dad centered stroller. You call it the Death Stroller 1000.
Yeah, that's the that was the hardest thing I thought about the whole pregnancy, was actually buying a stroller.
Yeah,
a push chair, as we call it over here.
Pram too. I also learned the word pram, which is another thing. If you are listening to this and you are in the Americas or someplace else, what Matt has done that's very helpful and adds another level to the humor is that there are footnotes. But they're footnotes to get his British references in case you don't get them, or to understand British phrases like pram that you may not know.
Yeah, so the perambulator.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is apparently an American guy who came up with it.
Yes, which I thought was great. I was so happy, but I was like, interesting that you guys use a term that the American guy came up with, and we completely kicked it to the curb. We're done with it. But anyway, I interrupted you. So you were creating a perfect stroller.
Yeah, so the original strollers that we got had entirely unnecessary features, things like a mosquito net.
Yes.
As came with the mosquito. We live in England. It comes with a mosquito net, and it comes with off-road wheels and this sort of thing. Basically, if you took all the things that this stroller we were buying had, it's great for sort of trekking up Kilimanjaro or through a jungle, and completely useless in England. So I was trying to design. I think I did a sketch of it in the book of a.
Yes.
Have a stroller with the kind of Mad Max style chariot wheels and that sort of thing, and the things that you can ram into people's ankles when you're boarding a subway train.
Yeah, it's got almost like a shovel scoop front, like an old school train engine. To kind of almost plow people out of the way. My favorite feature, though, that you designed, which I when I read that, and your book had lots of moments that not only did it make me laugh out loud, but when you're reading something that makes you laugh as hard as your book does, it's funny because there are moments when you're like, oh shit, yeah, why don't they do that? You talk about how it's weighted towards the front so that no matter what you hang on the handle, there's no chance of it flipping back and your kid falling back. Like, how is it that in the litigious society, I don't know how things are in Britain, but here in the Americas, we like to sue people and we love to sue large corporations for things that we did to our kids. And so how that isn't a mandatory safety feature is just asinine to me.
Yeah, that is strange. The way that they give you hooks on the bars, the handle of the stroller to hang bags off.
Yeah,
of.
You could hang a bag off of it, basically turning your stroller into a trebuchet. Like you're just waiting it to launch your infant into the sky at that point, right?
I mean, I know why it's not the case in England because we're not very litigious at all. No one really gives a shit.
If
a baby comes flying out of a pram, really. Whereas I guess over there, that's kind of a million-dollar lawsuit. But so I don't really know why they're not weighted better. Like that. They do seem to be designed by idiots.
Yes, absolutely. The other quick, while we're on the stroller thing, and one of the other things that Matt goes into the book, which I think makes it informative as well as entertaining, is he gives tips on traveling. And my favorite tip on traveling that I've never heard nor thought of is that if you are going to travel with a stroller, don't travel with your expensive stroller because it's just going to get tore up anyway. So just have a cheap one that you don't care what happens to it. And it's such it was a funny moment that made me laugh. And I was like, oh shit, he's right. Like, why would I send a $300 stroller to get just tossed around by a bunch of monkeys in the behind the screen? you know what? Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, I want to talk about the differences because you kind of hit on it with the litigious stuff. I just want to talk more about the differences between parenting here in America and parenting there in the UK. And then I have a game that is Matt talks about many people who have been listening to the show for a long time, or maybe you saw my stand up when I was on the road. You know about my distaste for child programming. My hate for Caillou and his how he doesn't make sense. Matt has an equal level of disdain for child programming, and he exposed something to me. And so I'm going to play a game with him when we come back after these messages. You, Matt, is because you get the impression just from the things that you go through in the book is that the similarities between here in the U.S. and there in the U.K. that are that we seem to be hyper obsessed with doing it right, like we're all worried that we're not doing a good enough job, we're not prepared enough, and that there is the same kind of feeling of there is no preparation. Like, is that kind of the mindset of the parents that you know there?
I think so, yeah. That must be universal, I think, because, you know, followers of Man vs. Baby and stuff across the world message me with exactly the same sentiment that when there is no way of preparing.
It's, you're closer, so here's my question, because I also, as I was reading your book, I was reading another book for another author that's coming on, Sarah Zasky, who she wrote a book about raising, being an American, but raising a baby in Germany. And I love Europeans' opinions on the other nations of Europe. And so would it be sound and would it fit into your German stereotype that Germans would feel like they automatically have more of a grasp on parenting from the jump? Or do you think they are just as neurotic and nervous as we are?
Actually, the book comes out in Germany today.
Oh, really?
It's,
So yeah, I guess we'll have to talk later and you can see what kind of
we'll have some live feedback about that in the next 24 hours, I think. So I honestly don't
but
know.
If you start looking at sales in Germany and all of a sudden you just hear then maybe that answers the question too. Maybe why would I want to fight this baby? I could take this baby simply in the wrestling match.
Man well, versus baby. They're a nation known for their sense of humor, isn't
right? Exactly. You know, so.
I can't actually. I shouldn't slag them off until it's failed. There.
There you go. Yeah. Let's wait. I think we only have like 3 listeners in Germany, so you're totally fine. Don't even worry about it.
Right, how are you guys?
So we have that commonality of kind of the neuroses about parenting and struggling to kind of really, because that's the thing I'm noticing lately is that it almost transcends a neuroses in that there is a realistic expectation that parents here in America have of themselves to do it perfectly. And that if they are not doing it perfectly, that they are failing, which seems so counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, I think I put the later chapters of the book, I've just got a copy in front of me. I put there's a prayer at the very back.
Yes.
Which is it's the final chapter begins a parent's prayer, which is may we give you hope, curiosity, compassion and love, but fuck things up just enough to make you interesting.
Exactly.
And I think that personality and character comes out of making a mess of it, I think.
Right.
So perfection is something that we strive for, and it's a mistake to even think that it's attainable, and two, it's something that you should even want, really.
I dog-eared that because my version of that is a little bit of abuse makes people interesting. That's how I've always said that.
that's very true. sorry, Justin, I just need to plug in my laptop. It's just binged at me.
Oh, the battery is dying? No worries at all. Do your thing.
I thought I was plugged in, but I'm fucking things up.
It's ironic that you say you're fucking things up as we're talking about fucking up our kids as parents.
But I can rectify this by putting the plug in the socket.
Yeah, therapy is the plug, I think, for killed children. I think that's what ends up happening. Therapy is right, the universal power adapter of life.
That is beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. So I'm there. I've sorted it. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. No worries at all. So, and we also talked about the fact that you're in Britain. They don't. So if your kid like slips on a freshly mopped floor at a grocery store, nobody thinks to sue.
No, people sort of gather around and call you a clumsy bastard.
Really?
Yeah, that's kind of the automatic reaction for somebody slipping over.
When your kid is in I don't know the terms over there, and I'm sorry. So we have like elementary school, which is like kindergarten through fifth or sixth grade. What would you call
it? Okay, so we'd call that primary.
Primary school. Okay, so in primary school, if you have a teacher who seems to like yell at the kids or is singling your kid out because they're not grasping the math, is there a PTA like organization? We have a parent teacher or association organization where it's a bunch of parents that get together once a week and talk about fundraiser and Halloween events and things like that. Or once a month, I mean, is there a group that activates or is there people that go like and get very frustrated with this teacher or is that just a part of it?
No, that's just a teacher. you get arseholes as teachers as well.
Okay. All right. I really feel like I'm doing a lot for the American Bureau of Tourism, by the way. Come and watch Americans drink nice fancy tea while they're yelling at their teachers from their PTA organizations and right before their court dates of slipping in a mall like a clumsy buffoon. Revolutionary's my arse. All right. So here's the thing that I thought was interesting from the book that I'm reading about parenting in Germany is that it is no big deal for you to leave a kid who's like, say, 5 or 6 years old at a playground by themselves. And you could walk said kid to the playground and then go around a corner and be out of sight while you enjoy a coffee. Can you do that in Britain as well? Because here in the America, people are getting arrested for doing stuff similar to that.
I can't imagine we'd do that over here, to be honest. No, I mean, maybe it's different in Germany. I can't imagine that we'd be that comfortable doing that. We've got our own share of weirdos over here as well. But I don't think we're that secure in our parenthood kids, maybe as much as the Germans are. But
see, and it's so interesting to me because here we have kind of a fun stigma it's bounced around to a few morning radio shows here, where you have, is it Germany or is it Florida? Because any weird news story of some guy doing something with his Johnson or something along those lines seems to either be from our southeastern state of Florida, the penis of the Americas, or it's from Germany. Like that, and I don't know. Do you guys have that? Like, are people in the UK like going, oh, look at what the wacky Germans are doing again?
Well, the thing is, they seem to have an awful lot of cannibals.
Oh, really? They eat people in Germany?
I think so. Yeah. Not all of them, but they have a fair few cases of people who kind of meet each other online to agree to eat each other and things like that.
Really?
Yeah, they've got a very strange. They've got some wacky criminals in Germany. The serial killers tend to be cannibals, whereas ours tend to be stranglers. Which is any help?
No, it does help a lot because
tourists.
I find it really interesting that you would say that when two people mutually meet online, say they want to eat each other, that you would call them criminals, because that seems like consensual murder. That's not murder at all. And I feel like, I think really what we're seeing is the British stereotype of maybe you're just uptight, Matt, and maybe you need to loosen up.
it really is the prude in me that stops me from allowing people to eat each other.
Maybe
after meeting online.
Maybe have a caffeine-free lemon loaf tea and just take a bite out of somebody's finger and just lighten up a little bit.
You're not selling the lemon loaf tea, no matter how hard you try and push.
Come
it.
Come on, it's organic, baby.
Of course it is.
Okay, I'm going to dip away from our parenting topic here, but how many cups of tea do you drink in a day? And is it hot tea throughout the year?
Yeah, always hot tea. I don't drink that much tea. I probably have maybe 4 cups a day. Whereas my other half, Lindsay, will probably easily have 8 cups maybe in a day.
And do you do the cream and sugar or do you do it just straight black?
Milk and sugar.
Okay.
So the tea bag goes in the cup, mm-hmm. The hot water goes on top of the tea bag comes out of the cup, the milk goes in, the sugar goes in, you get stirred. Only ever in that order. Anything outside of that order is a crime.
So you're supposed to put milk before the sugar? Is that what I heard?
Yeah. Yeah, milk before the sugar.
Oh, I've been doing it wrong this whole time. I had a girlfriend whose parents were Irish, and they were the first ones to introduce me to hot tea with cream and sugar, where I was like, hot tea? I've had iced tea. Like, I'm from the South. My parents are from the South here in America, so we have sweet tea, which is you make a concentrate. You get, like, 5 tea bags. You put them in a pot of water, and you boil them, and then let them sit for about 5 minutes, and then you pour in a cup of sugar and stir it in while it's hot, and it makes like the syrup of the tea, although it's not thick like a maple syrup. And then you pour it into a giant, I wish you guys could see Matt's face. It looks so disgusted. Then you pour that into a pitcher, and you either fill it with ice or fill it the rest with water and kind of water it down a little bit, and it is delightful. I'm going to email you a recipe. You're going to try it. It's going to be fun for you. And
I'm just going to delete that.
All right. That's fair. That's just spam. Which, by the way, spam tastes delightful with some sweet tea. All right, so back to parenting. So you guys are just as watchful of kids. So do kids walk? When you were a kid growing up in England, did you walk to school on your own?
Well, it's got progressively more, more cautious.
Yeah.
Since I was a kid, you would easily, walk to school on your own. My dad actually put me on a train to Portsmouth, which is a 7-hour train journey, just to be met at the other end of the line, when I was probably six, something like that.
Now, were your parents divorced? Like, who's picking you up at the other end?
My auntie Pat, who I'd never met, but by reputation, she had a mustache. That's the only thing I knew about her. That's how I was going to recognize her at the station. So it was a 6-hour journey to meet a woman with a mustache.
Is every other woman in Portsmouth?
The last time that I've, that I've taken a train journey for that exact same reason.
Yeah, to see a mustached woman.
Exactly, yeah. But, so back then, that was fine and that was perfectly normal. But over the, I would say over the past 20 years, we've become a lot more nanny-ish about the way that we treat our kids and stuff like that. So now they have things like walking patrols, walking buses, which is not a bus at all, but they'll adults come to the door and they kind of walk around the housing estate and pick up people from each of their doors, and they all walk together to the school and things like that, so that kids don't end up walking on their own to school. So it's become a lot more nanny state, I think. Yeah.
So instead of a school bus picking or a carpool that you might share as parents would share volunteering to walk the kids, or is this somebody who works with the school, like a crossing guard almost?
Yeah, it tends to be parents who rotate, and they do call it a walking bus. Basically.
That's awesome. At least you're getting out and walking.
I mean, at least, it stops the kids from being quite so podgy, I think.
It's true,
They're all being driven in 4x4s to the 1 mile it takes to get from your house to the school gates.
I'm so glad we're talking about this, because I'm becoming more and more fascinated between the similarities between the UK and America as far as the parenting culture, and then also what seems to be the direct opposite of what's going on in Germany. It really is. And now we know how to make a more sexually oriented strangling serial killer, and it's through a nanny state. But if you want to make a more cannibalistic type serial killer, you leave your kid at the park while you go enjoy a cappuccino.
Well, if this podcast does nothing more than that,
maybe we could get you guys back into the European Union. We can make that happen on this podcast.
Yeah, if you could, that would be great.
I'll do my best for you, buddy. Have you noticed that? Do you travel into the quote unquote mainland of Europe much or no?
Fairly regularly. I've been out to see the publishers in Germany and Italy and France, but it's not that far for us to go. I mean, you can travel into France certainly for like $50, or on the Channel Tunnel.
Yeah,
you can just get a train into France, and that's obviously opens up to the whole Europe. So, yeah, I travel reasonably often, probably 4 or 5 times a year. I'll go out there, and I've got friends in Germany and stuff. Friends who've been in the army in Germany and married German, had German wives and German kids and stuff.
Ooh,
so,
that sounds hot.
So I go to it does now. But I go out to Germany fairly regularly. To be honest, I love the German people. Actually, I think they're.
Well, no, I do too, and I love the ideas in this book. I'm fascinated by the differences. Have you noticed any other differences, like say between Spain and you guys, or Italy, or France? Even
I think. Well, the weird thing is that it does seem universal in terms of parenting, in terms of the books. It does seem to be universal how fucking clueless we all are,
right?
Really. So, which is great. You know, it's great for sales, and it's great for my for me feeling inept and clueless as a parent to know that it's literally global.
Yeah,
that we all feel like this. I honestly don't see that many differences in terms of our outlook and fears and terrors of becoming parents across Europe. I don't know so much with America, because I get quite a lot of messages from quite a few American followers on Man versus Baby and stuff, and they seem to be of the same opinion, of the same feeling, especially when they're just about to be parents. It's just paralyzing fear, I think, and then spending the next year or two realizing that it's okay to completely make a mess of it.
Right.
Because like we said before, perfection is not something that you should, it's not attainable, and it's not something you should aim for. So I don't see that many differences now.
Before we move on, do you have any questions for me about something that maybe you think is a difference in parenting in America versus the UK? You could say no, too. That's also an option, but I'm just curious.
Not so much about parenting. What's been interesting is editing the book for an American audience. So there's certain things that that we've had to footnote, as you've already mentioned, and certain things that it's interesting to discover that you don't have over there or don't. You don't know what. One of the things I had to footnote was conkers. Do you know what conkers are?
No.
So conkers is like horse chestnuts.
Like no.
A chestnut tree. So you take a chestnut off a tree, you drill a hole into it, you put a shoelace through it, you tie off the shoelace, and then as it dangles from the shoelace, you hit somebody else's chestnut that's also on a shoelace.
No.
Now this is called conkers, and this is like there's not a single person in the British Isles who won't know what conkers is and won't have grown up playing it. But of course, I mentioned it in the book just as a kind of side. Just as a reference to something else, and straight away the American editor is like, "What the fuck is conkers?"
Yeah, and I don't even remember it being in here. I'm going through to try and see
maybe
the footnotes.
We took it out. Maybe it was taken out because it was just so confusing.
Yeah,
but little turns of phrase as well, like "piss on your chips."
I'm sorry, what?
it's a saying. It's a British saying, which is when someone pisses on your chips. So this is going to take a little bit of explanation.
I'm listening. You have my attention. I was impressed by the W asterisk then, and I looked down and it said wanker. And I was like, because here's the thing. That's why I thought, at first I thought the footnotes were just for jokes, which I was like, oh, what a brilliant use of footnotes. Because the first one I remember coming across was the W asterisk. I wonder what W is. And as I was reading, I read the rest of the thing, and then I saw the footnote of wanker, and I was like, oh, that's great. And I go, but I didn't even think that this book was edited for America. I thought it was just the book. And so I was like, how funny is it that they can't say wanker, but he said fuck like 27 times or whatever. Like, and I go, well, maybe that's the other joke. All of these things were going through my head and I thought they were hilarious.
Well, I'm very proud that there is a footnote in it, which is literally just one word. And it's wanker.
Wanker, right. Send that to Manchester too, those fucks.
Yeah. So piss on your chips is a saying that basically means that... Do you have the saying piss on your bonfire? Do you have that saying?
No. Oh, I guess it's like raining on your parade. It's like...
Rain on your parade.
Yeah.
So it basically...
I've also heard who peed in your Cheerios.
That's probably the closest to
Yeah, because you guys like Cheerios too, right? But you don't, they're not just cereal to you. You just say it when you get happy, right? And excited. You say Cheerios, right?
That's it. That is great. Great vision of England is just basically Downton Abbey and everybody's sat drinking.
Yeah, you're either very sad and maudlin and aristocratic or you're Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins. That's the way we see it.
We're literally either chimney sweeps or prince or princesses or royalty.
Yeah.
So piss on your chips is a saying that that basically means rain on your parade, but it's from a very specific scenario of you're walking home from the pub and you bought some chips, which we call they're basically French fries. We call French fries chips rather than crisps. So you buy some French fries on the way home from the pub. And as you're walking home, you put them on the floor, on the ground, to take a leak. And you accidentally piss on your own chips. So that's basically raining on your parade. So someone's pissed on your chips.
Yeah, even though it's usually
yourself.
It's
a very, very specific phrase.
Yeah, it seems
that I assumed was global, but it, clearly not.
Negative on that one, Ghost Rider. No way. There's no way we'd ever heard of that. That's great. Any other differences that you could, before we move on? I just don't want to cut anything off that you thought of or anything like that.
I can't particularly think of anything. I mean, the main concern when I was writing the book itself is that there's certain things where the American audience seem a little bit more puritanical about, which is strange from a British guy's point of view.
Yeah. But, I'm shocked even on this side.
Yeah, I got the one concern I had was that the only complaints I get about the foul language and about the swearing are from American followers of Man vs. Baby. I don't know whether they're from a specific state or whether, you know, maybe, I don't know, Bible Belt states or something like that. But I'm much more likely to get that. I've never had a complaint about the swearing from the UK or from Europe, but I do get quite a lot of complaints about this swearing from America.
Well, here's my theory culturally. I think it really all comes from the word cunt. because you guys can say cunt like you could say chips, right? It's not a big deal. But right
it's
now, I know the numbers. 93% of my American audience, their buttholes pucker, and some of their cunts even pucker whenever I say cunt. In fact, we're supposed to say see you next Tuesday to make some kind of bullshit acronym out of cunt. And that's what I'm trying to do right here is just to sensitize. You know how when you fly, how all of a sudden it's like it's a free rein, and if you're flying to England, then the minute you take off, all of a sudden like the drinking rules apply, like you're already in England. Yeah. I'm doing that via Skype. I feel that because I'm talking to a British man in Great Britain, I can say the word cunt like it's no big deal.
Well, funnily enough, I'm just on deadline for the second book at the minute, and I wrote a sentence today, which is about how toddlers respond to the word no, like it's the most offensive word you can say to a two-year-old, and in this sentence, I said there's no adult equivalent of the word no in its offensiveness. The closest thing I can get is if over Sunday lunch you call your grandma a cunt, that's how I compared saying no to a toddler.
That's
now,
great.
I couldn't put that on my Facebook page because I'd get a response from America that was very negative to that word and twat as well. That's not a very that's like literally just a sentence enhancer.
Well, exactly. Yeah, but here it seems like we're really uptight about fun terms for vaginas. Like that's where we really get our
there's
pilgrim,
a lot of them, isn't there?
our pilgrim roots really shine through when
but then the weird thing is that the British are a lot more prudish about actual vaginas. So.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's when you said that we would be more puritanical than say the UK from a stereotypical standpoint as an American, I'm shocked. But the more we talk about it, I realize, no, I'm starting to realize that, you know, we call ourselves these freedom fighters and all, and we're Americans, you know, but it's a lot of bullshit. We're super uptight and super sensitive now. And so everybody's easily offended. And that's great. I'm glad that there are people like you, Matt, sending the word fuck and cunt across the ocean to American parents so that they can learn to lighten up a little bit, right?
My mom and dad are so proud.
All right, before we get into Moment of the Week, and I don't know, we'll see how long this lasts. I'm going to gauge this based on how much fun you're having. But one of the things that you talked about in the book is, and I want to see if I can find it, I dog-eared it here, but you talked about music and how you gave a list of like kind of old school classic rock songs that your kids really loved, which was great, and some people were giving you flack because of the content. And you quoted another like survey or whatever where they had found like multiple instances of death and everything in every other song. That's another thing I love. But the other thing that you mentioned was how you find yourself hating TV, and it's not because you want you. How did you put it? Basically, what you're saying is the real reason why that you don't like watching children's programming is because the programming is so bad. There's never a narrative. There's never any kind of through line. I don't know if you guys have over there, but there are shows here like Phineas and Ferb is the first one that always jumps to mind, is that was a well-written cartoon show for kids that an adult could also enjoy.
Phineas and Ferb is absolutely brilliant.
Yes.
It's the one I'll sit down and watch on my own.
Because God forbid, right? God forbid that you actually have something where your kids can learn an intellectual approach to comedy. Is that even if it is fart jokes, right? Like they happen to be doing that part, but you can deliver it in a comedically intellectual way, and you can actually teach kids to have a sense of humor. And here's my theory. You reference, if I'm not mistaken, the Teletubbies in the book. And I got to be honest, when I started to build this game, I did it just mostly for fun, but you're going to see something here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a clip. Excuse my cough. I'm going to play a clip from you. And this clip is either from the Teletubbies or Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Are you familiar with those shows? Your job, Matt, if you can, I dare you, if you can, is to try to figure out if the clip I play is from the Teletubbies or Keeping Up with the Kardashians. All right?
Hit me.
Do you have any questions? Are you ready to play?
No, it seems fairly straightforward.
All right, here we go. Here is your first clip. Enjoy.
Keeping Up with the
Look at. All right, so that's clip one. All right. Now, was that Teletubbies or was that Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
Well, there was a lot of slurping.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know what I like about you, Matt, is that you and I have never had a conversation, but you always pick up what I am putting down. And let me just tell you, as we go through this game, it's just going to get more enjoyable. So, was it Teletubbies or was that Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
By the excess slurping, I'm going to go Kardashians.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That was actually the Teletubbies, Matt. I'm so terribly sorry. All right, now I'm going to play this clip. Now, it could be from either show, but the reason why we play the game, Matt, is because you may notice a similarity in formatting.
Damn, Gina, you looking fly and...
Mm-hmm. All right, now was that Keeping Up with the Kardashians or was it the Teletubbies, Matt?
That's a tricky one because I know Dipsy does sometimes look fly as fuck.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to go Kardashians there.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. Well done. All right, you're figuring out the game. All right, so let's now here's another clip. Is this the Teletubbies or Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
Do you guys know what freezing is?
No.
It's like a form of witchcraft. And I heard someone did witchcraft. People around us are doing it. You write down names and you like put them in the freezer and you like freeze them. It's like doing voodoo to you. It's like a form to like freeze them so they're stuck in a place of like torment because like whatever. I'm like, why would anybody do that? Don't freeze me. I'll freeze you back. That's so rude.
No voodoo can tear us down. Just that's what Michael Jackson used to always say.
Really? Uh-huh. Maybe I'm reincarnated Michael Jackson.
All right. Now, was that the Teletubbies or was that Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
Fuck, the Teletubbies got really dark.
Right. Well, they grow with their audience, I understand.
Is that right? They've been actually 20 years, I think so, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go Kardashians.
Oh, yes. Well done. See, you're figuring it out, Matt. All right. Yeah. Here comes another one coming your way.
Lala's knees are all dirty.
Oh, Lala knee be all dirty. Uh-oh.
Two dirty knees.
All right, now was that Keeping Up with the Kardashians? Or was
that's
that
got to be Kardashians. It's some sort of spin-off, presumably.
Mm. I'm so sorry, Matt. That was Teletubbies. That was Lala, and she has dirty knees. But I could understand why you would get those two confused. I could totally understand that. All right, here comes your next clip.
Having a house is a huge responsibility.
A huge responsibility that I don't even think that you realize.
Do you know how to do your own laundry?
No.
Now, they're obviously trying to figure out either was it a Kardashian or a Teletubby if they know how to do their own laundry. So either way you go here, this is getting educational, which I think you would think is more in the Teletubby realm. I'm not trying to influence your decision at all, but do you think that was Teletubbies or Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
So I'm going to go Teletubbies.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You know what? There is some good to come out of that incorrect answer, though. For a while, you were really nailing the Kardashians, but flunking in the Teletubbies. And so I was really worried about what's on your British DVR at home. But here comes our next clip.
Oh, dirty. Uh-oh.
The old Debbie. Uh-oh. One, two, three. No, dirty knees.
Somebody's coming.
All right.
That's the Kardashians.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. That was that's actually the Teletubbies on that one. All right, so are you having fun with this game so far?
Oh, yeah.
All right, just a few more clips to torture you with. Here they come.
Quake insurance. We live in California. That is a must. Flood insurance, fire insurance, especially up here. There was a flood in my house. I came home. The whole thing was flooded. My pool table room.
Wow. That sounds like a real life struggle that they're dealing with on either the Kardashians or Teletubbies. Which do you think that one was from?
I think that's the Teletubbies insurance episode.
Oh, sorry. That was actually Keeping Up with the Kardashians. They were trying to help Kylie figure out she's moving on her own. I know way too much about this episode already.
Yes, you do.
All right. Here comes another one.
You have to have rattlesnake fencing for your house for your dogs.
You need to have a really good gardener.
Set up electricity.
Kim and Chloe have made me aware that it's a little tough to own a home, and I really hope I'm not in over my head.
Now, I don't know if you were paying attention, but a part of that clip actually could be could inform you of the answer. So just be aware of that. Was that the
Did he mention Kardashians?
No, not Kardashians. No, but it was there were some names thrown in there. So I'm sorry if you weren't paying attention.
I'm going to go with Kardashians anyway.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. Yes, well done. All right, just two more left. Thank you. And these are more for my enjoyment than anybody else's, I think, at this point. Here you go.
Yay!
There. Lala's knees are all clean now.
Yay! The Lala knee be the all clean now.
Now, just for the record, I may or may not have snuck in the Kim Kardashian Ray J sex tape just to kind of throw you off there. And if you feel like that was a clip from that, then you would say Keeping Up with the Kardashians because it, of course, stars a Kardashian more than it does a Teletubby.
Yeah, I'm going to go, although there's a Teletubby in it, as I remember.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm going to go Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yes. Oh, wait, no, I'm wrong. I'm so sorry. Actually, no, that was a Teletubbies. But it's very similar, right? All right, one last one. Here it comes.
Hey, Tinky Winky. Hey, Tipsy. Hey, La La.
Look at Poe. She's dirty all over.
Hey, she's dirty all over. Who is it? Is that Teletubbies or Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
What am I doing with my life?
To be fair to that statement, you've only wasted about 6.5 minutes so far on this game.
I am a best-selling author.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe it's 10 minutes. Maybe it's 10 minutes then. We're not going to argue about the rest of this podcast, but 10 minutes may or may not be wasted that you'll never get back. But yet the listeners still need to know, was that the Teletubbies? Who is dirty all over? Is it a Kardashian or a Teletubby?
I'm going to go Teletubbies.
Oh, and on a high note. Well done, Matt. Well done. I did not keep score. I did not keep score because, as you alluded to earlier, I think we are all losers for just playing that game. But I want to end it with this. Is you have to admit, on some level, I just came up with this game while I was reading your book. And so I was like, I go, oh, this would be fun just to compare the two. Because I honestly thought, Matt, when I started putting this together, that they are so polar opposite that the fun part would be, and I'm so glad that you picked up on this comedically, because the fun part would be like, ooh, is it different? I don't know. Like, but when you listen to them, formulaically, what if Teletubbies is just training young minds to be into Keeping Up with the Kardashians? Because I think it would be hard for us to understand why either one of those is enjoyable to a human brain. And yet both highly rated shows.
You have hit on something there.
Right?
I think maybe, yeah. Maybe this is the brainwashing starts early.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And I'm saying that if you watch Phineas and Ferb, then you're more inclined to enjoy a Seinfeld or something when you get older, or a Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. But if you watch Teletubbies, then you're just hooked to whatever E! Entertainment is telling you to watch.
Yeah, just turns your brains to mashed potato.
Exactly.
And
exactly. Yeah. All right, well, thank you for playing. You did a great job. It was a valiant effort. The odds were stacked against you, but let's take a break and we'll come back and do a little moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with a Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
All right, Matt, usually I let the guests go first, but since it is your first time on the show, if you would like for me to go first, I will go first. Your call.
Yeah, you can go first. I'll gauge.
All right. So my moment of the week is actually, it's pretty dark, to be honest, so I'm going to keep the bar pretty low for you, but it actually happened last night over dinner. For some reason, my son, we do the usual, how was your day at school? And my six-year-old is very dramatic. He's very much, I really feel like if it wasn't for his fascination with Victoria's Secret models at the age of two, I would feel like he would be the stereotypical gay friend in a rom-com. Like, he's very catty. He's very bitchy about things and social situations. And he was talking about a young girl in his class whose dad is rich. But she keeps chewing on hair ties, and he posted this, like, or threw out there for us to figure out a hypothetical, if you would. He said, you know, Dad, if you had a daughter, if you were rich, which I like that that designation, if you were rich, Dad, we all know you're not, and we're very sad about it, but if you were, what would you do if you had a daughter that would chew hair ties? And I said, well, depends. I go, is it just me and the daughter? And they kind of look at me, and I said, and I go, they go, what do you mean? And I said, well, I said, are you guys there? Like, are you also my kids, or is she my only kid? And do I have a wife? And then he started to get annoyed. He's like, Dad, just answer the question. I said, well, the question leads to more questions. I have to know if I'm going to give an answer. And so we had this very humorous back and forth that everybody was enjoying and laughing at the dinner table, which very rarely happens, to be honest, at my house. But anyway, so then I said, well, if we'd narrowed it down to it was just me and the girl. And I said, I would kill her. And they look at me and they go, why? And they go, and he goes, or Jack, he looks at me and he smugly says, you'll go to jail. I said, not if nobody else there is there to know about it. They go, what do you mean? I said, well, there's no mom in the picture, right? To rat me out to the cops. I go, so if this kid's just wasting all my millions on hair ties, I just say I put her out of her misery. I mean, how satisfying a life can she have if she's already 6 years old and her high point is chewing on a hair tie? Like, I feel like I'm doing her a favor at this point. And they're just looking at me, and then they go, and so then my six-year-old starts to go, well, okay, then we're there. And I go, so now I have you and your brother? And I go, yeah. I go, what about your mom? Is your mom there? And they said, no. I go, well, then I kill all three of you. And they go, this is that abuse I was talking about earlier on in the show. So they look at me, they go, you can't kill us. I said, well, I have to kill you. I got to kill her. And now you guys are just witnesses. You're a liability at this point. You're going to squeal. You guys can't keep a secret. Why do you think your mom and I have to hide Christmas presents to each other that you get? Because you'll just blab and say whatever you got for the birthday for the person. And they were like, they're just sitting there. My nine-year-old is dying laughing during this whole scenario. So the six-year-old then changes it up a little bit, I guess, to personalize it. He goes, okay, mom is your daughter. he goes, and I am the other son. He goes, but Jacob is already dead. That's what he said. And I said, I'm listening. And I said, so you think that by making mom my daughter, that's going to make me less likely to kill her? He said, yes. And he holds up his finger. He says, I have a shotgun. And I said, well, what's the shotgun got to do with it? He goes, because if I see you try to kill your mom daughter, he goes, I will shoot you with my shotgun. I said, yeah, but I'm the one who has the bullets for the shotgun. So, and he goes, okay. And this is how I love how he put it. He goes, well, then I will go and use kitchen supplies. I go, what do you mean? And I'll stab you with them. I go, you'll stab me with kitchen supplies? Like a bottle of 409? What are you talking about? And then it came to be where I guess they'd had this conversation as well with their mother. I thought I was the only one perpetuating the abuse, but evidently my wife has gotten on board. And my son said if a burglar ever broke into the house, he knows exactly what he would do. And what he would do is he would go into our drawer, which was hilarious because it took him nothing short of 2.5 minutes, because nobody under the age of 27 can find something in an instant, I've learned in parenting. And he pulls out the tenderizer, like a meat mallet that you would use to spread out a chicken, a piece of chicken cutlet that you could turn into chicken parmesan or something, or chicken fried steak. And he goes this, and then to really drive home that I'm raising, possibly now after talking to you, Matt, a German serial killer, he takes the pronged end and he goes, I hit him in the balls with this, then I hit him in the nose, and he goes, and then he flips it to the flat side, and then the face. And I go, why is the pointy end used for the balls and the nose, but not the face? And he goes, because it'll hurt. Okay. So that was my dinner conversation with my kids last night. And I say that, Matt, I say that for two reasons. One, because I found it very funny. But two, I just as what I felt like we were kindred spirits from across the Atlantic pond, as we've learned. I wanted to make sure that you knew that no matter how many times you say fuck or cunt in front of your kids, I'm still doing a worse job on the other side of the planet for you. So don't worry, buddy. There is a yang to your yen. Don't even trip, okay?
That is good to know.
You still think a little bit of abuse is addressed? Yeah. I haven't changed your mind, have I?
No, it's all steak. And that's quite ingenious, really, the steak tenderizer.
Yeah, right? I just love that.
Engineer.
I love the idea that he would go balls, nose, and then flip it for the face. Because at first I thought, well, he didn't want to put the balls in the face. Like, because I'm imagining there would be some flesh clinging to the prong of some kind. Yeah, but no, it was just, he said it would hurt more. And I guess it's just a change of pain is what he's really going for. I don't know. I mean, I haven't spent what I would say too much time thinking about it, but I probably haven't spent too much. All right, your turn, Matt.
Charlie's not, as I say, he's only sort of 2.5, so we don't really have conversations like that yet. He's restricted to to mine and poo-poo, where his go-to words.
Yeah.
So we don't have those long... We don't really discuss... murdering my wife. Yeah. Give another couple of years. No,
yeah, you'll get there. He's got 4 more years then, it sounds like.
But in terms of something that I found quite touching recently was when we're sort of playing with his toys and that sort of thing, we always play the same game first out of the toy box, which is we pick he picks two toys to have a fight with each other. So ordinarily, kids will pick like a Spider-Man and a Superman or whatever and give one to me and we'll just sort of smash them against each other until one dies or comes apart in his hands. But usually he chooses a 2-foot-tall Tyrannosaurus Rex, plastic Tyrannosaurus Rex that he's got that I bought him. And he chooses for me, and that's what he chooses for himself to engage in this fight, and he chooses for me a small wooden figure of Noah's wife. So we have Tyrannosaurus Rex versus Noah's wife. And he chooses this shitty Noah's wife every time. I mean, and the toy box is full of all kinds of cool shit. And he gets a 2-foot-tall fucking dinosaur and gives me a 3-inch-tall wooden Noah's fucking wife.
Her arms even move? She doesn't even have movable arms? Oh, she can't even defend herself.
Literally like a cookie cutter with just a print of some random biblical woman's face on it versus a fully posable plastic T-Rex that roars and everything. You can move the fucking arms on it, the jaws close, the tail whips, and I get Noah's wife. I don't even know what Noah's wife's called, but I get fucking Noah's wife. And I'm saying no every single time. And I'm fucking sick of it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I'm sick of this bullshit. but then yesterday we were fishing in the toy box, and he pulled out the dinosaur, and he says you can be dinosaur, Daddy.
Aww.
Which was quite moving moment for me. But that was turned out is because he'd just been bought a 3-foot-tall fucking triceratops. My mum's just bought him a 3-foot-tall, which is a foot taller than now the T-Rex. So he still stiffed me. And even halfway through that game, he took on the roles of both dinosaurs and just kind of nodded towards Noah's wife. And I just thought, oh, fuck it. I'll just
oh, that is awesome. That is outstanding. He's got a bigger one. Oh, that's fun. Oh, Matt, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for being on the show. The name of his book is Man Versus Baby, The Comedy and Chaos of Real Life Parenting. It's by Matt Coyne. The spelling of his name is in the description of this book. Depending on when you're listening, the book is going to be released here in the U.S. on April 17th, 2018. So if it is after that date, go ahead and get it. If it is before that date, right now you can pre-order the Kindle edition. There is an Audible, there's an audio edition as well, and a paperback, all available on Amazon, where we know everybody gets their books. Or you could go to facebook.com/manversusbaby. The full link of that is in the description of this episode. And I think that's about it. Is there a Twitter account or anything that you would like to also promote, Matt?
Matt Coyne, and I'm also on Instagram as Man Versus Baby as well. Although, that tends to be the last picture I posted was a picture of a bag of shit hanging from a door handle. So don't get your hopes up about Instagram.
I don't know. I feel like that's right in the wheelhouse of my listeners. So hit up that Instagram, Man Versus Baby. And I apologize. I've been saying your name wrong this entire time. It's Matt Coyne.
No, Matt Coyne, but that was taken.
Oh,
by an American guy, actually.
Really?
It was an American football coach or something. So I had to go with Matt Coyne. My name is Matt Coyne, but my handle on Twitter is Matt Coyne, yeah.
All right. Well, I will put that in the description of this episode as well. Thank you again, Matt. Please, I got to tell you, if I haven't said it enough, I really mean this. You need to go get this book. Especially if it's a great gag gift for a friend, for if you're doing a baby shower or anything along those lines, get this book. And if you are in a parenting low, like we all have been, where you're just super frustrated and you need a good laugh, go get this book, throw it on your Kindle and read it, because I guarantee you, you will laugh out loud and it will lighten your spirits just from reading this book and knowing that there's some poor shit whistle asshole on the other side of the world. You're quiet, Matt. I'm working, Matt. I'm working. Shh, quiet.
That's my new bio. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I think you should lose the Matt Coyne. Don't do Matt Coyne. Get that Twitter handle. Oh, Matt, it has been an absolute pleasure. On behalf of Matt Coyne, author of Man Versus Baby, this is Justin Warcham saying hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.